In America today, we are obsessed with sporting events. We are. These images that you'll see for the backgrounds today, these are all images that I've taken. Most of them are from a trip that that I took hiking up into the mountains in Idaho. But I just wanted to explain that. That threw me off. I saw the picture. It's beautiful, isn't it? That was one of three lakes out in Idaho. It was beautiful. It was really cold, and it was full of fish. It was awesome. But in America, we are obsessed with sporting events. This afternoon, I plan on watching the Lions if I can stay awake long enough to watch the Lions. But we are obsessed with sports, and we can see this based upon how much money Americans actually spend for these sports, how much money these sports make every year. On average, the NBA makes about $7 billion a year. Last year alone, Major League Baseball made $9.9 billion from 30 teams. And last year, the NFL had a total revenue of around $15 billion. We love sports. We love to watch athletes give it their all. And I think this is partially because we respect the skill level that they've achieved. They've achieved something that we wish we could, because skill and gifting is actually a God-given thing. And he doesn't just give it to Christians. I heard a speaker at chapel at the college I attended speak on this, and it stuck with me, that skills are not just given to Christians. They are given to everyone, and that we as everyone can use our skills to build a kingdom. And it's either going to be God's kingdom or it's going to be our kingdom. And our kingdom doesn't last that long. But we admire these skills. We admire the strength and the ability that these people have worked thousands of hours to achieve. They push themselves every practice. And they endure pain. Yes, pain. If you've been part of any kind of sporting anything, you understand that when you run, when you push, when you lift weights, when you endure, you actually have a physical pain that happens inside of your muscles, inside of your mind, inside of your chest, as you heave for air and you struggle to push through. And that is a day-to-day fight. And every day you push yourself a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. I've heard this premise quoted. I'm going to give you a couple different quotes. But it's the same premise, and it's used in multiple different sports, and it's said by multiple different people. But here's one of these quotes. We don't practice until we get it right. We practice until we never get it wrong. Or, I know I'd make that shot. I knew I'd make that shot because I've made that shot 1,000 times already in practice. I knew I could make that catch. I knew I could run that marathon. I knew I could do that because I had already done it 1,000 times in practice. We keep pushing ourselves to this point of endurance, just a little bit beyond what we think we can do. And then week by week, day by day, we see that point of endurance, that point of strength, get farther and farther along. I was going to ask for a volunteer, but I'm worried I'm going to run short on time. I was going to have somebody come up here and do a physical activity. Push-ups was probably going to be my my point of reference. And have somebody do push-ups. As many push-ups, I know Uncle Mike would willingly volunteer, but doing as many push-ups as physically possible. And when that person reaches the point of endurance, when they cannot go anymore, they are exhausted, and their arms are shaking, and they are heaving for breath, and sweat is dripping down off their brow onto our beautiful carpet. Okay, when that happens, and they fall flat on their chest, I was going to get down in their face, and I was going to start yelling, come on, you can do one more. Get it out. Get it out. I'll do them with you. Come on three. Take a deep breath, and one more. One more is all you got. Okay, you can do it. One, two, three. They would do a push-up, and we would all cheer, and it'd be wonderful, okay? We thrive. when we have somebody that pulls more out of us than we think we can do ourselves. Because in that moment where whoever would have volunteered would have fallen flat and I would have cheered them on to do one more, the reason they would have quit is not because they physically didn't have one more inside of them. We would have proven that wrong by cheering them on and they would have given one more. The reason they quit was because pain became their focus, so failure became their outcome. Pain became their focus, so failure became their outcome. When we listen to these coaches, we give more than we originally thought we were able to. Some of us need that pushing more than others. Some of us are a little harder headed than others. I can remember one instance in particular. I'll share this real quick. But in high school, I love football. I have a little gift today to kind of demonstrate this. These are not my cleats from football because they got destroyed regularly. But you can even see mud and dirt still on them. I'm going to leave these right here so you all can stare at them lovingly. They even have a sock in them. It's wonderful. Okay. So in football, in high school, I remember this point. It was a particular game. I can't remember who we were playing, but it was still early on in the game, and we were evenly matched. Momentum was swinging both ways, and we couldn't determine who was going to win that game. You can usually tell by the momentum swings in sports and athletics who's going to win. Okay, it's early on in the game, and we are evenly matched, and it is third down. The first two downs, first and second down, we had pushed them back, and they're towards their touchdown, towards their end zone, and it is high stress for both teams. The first two plays, I gave it everything I had, and I'm heaving for breath. I'm bent over. I can barely stand up. My head is pounding. My legs and my chest are burning, and I am gasping for air. And we had this sign where if we tapped our helmet, and we looked at the sidelines, that told the coach, they need out. They need somebody to replace them. They're hurt. They need a breath. They need a rest. They need a break. Something is going on. And I remember tapping my helmet, and I remember my coach screaming from the sidelines, no, Cray, you're where I need you to be. You got this. You can do it. And 5 seconds earlier, I was ready to quit. 5 seconds earlier, I wasn't quitting the game, but I was saying, I need a break. I need to put this weight down. I need to sit down and rest. And I had a coach that yelled something that I needed to hear. And all of a sudden, my pain was not my focus, so I didn't quit. My pain was not my focus, so I didn't quit. If I remember correctly, I got the tackle for that down, they kicked off the ball to us the next down, and then we scored a touchdown. The momentum swung, and we won the game. I'm not saying I won the game. I really am saying I won the game. But I'm not saying I won the game. I'm saying that I changed my perspective in that moment in the game. That was a game-winning moment for me, and it was not at the end of the game. It was towards the beginning of the game. I'm going to challenge us this morning that I think God is our coach. That God is our coach. He's so much more. He is master. He is savior. He is father. He is Lord. He is king. He is comforter. He is friend. But he's more, so much more. He's everything we could ever need. This morning, I'm going to challenge us that God is coach. And just like any good coach, God sees in us what we can't see in the moment. God sees there's potential there. There is strength there that they don't know they have. There is skill there they don't think they can reach. And we know from watching any kind of sporting, anything, that a coach can make or break a team, right? But a coach is only as good as the team that listens to them. You can have a wonderful, high-paid, very skilled coach, but if your team doesn't listen to them, they're not going anywhere. And God is the best coach we could ever have. He knows exactly what we need to hear and exactly what we need to be challenged with. But like earlier, I was going to have somebody come up and do push-ups, and I was going to get down and I was going to yell and I was going to, you know, mute my mic and you'd still be able to hear me. But I was going to scream and get that person to give one more, okay, because we needed that encouragement. Well, Scripture tells us in 1 Kings chapter 18, we see that God's voice is more of a still, gentle voice than a screaming voice. And I'm going to challenge us this morning that the longer we follow God, the more gentle and still his voice becomes. Another translation says gentle whisper instead of still quiet. Gentle whisper. I'm going to challenge us this morning that the longer we follow God, the more gentle his whisper becomes. And there's a few reasons for that, but one of the big reasons that I think is because we should know God's voice more the longer we follow him. The longer we follow him, we should know his voice more. It shouldn't take him screaming to get us to listen. I can tell you, I've told you this story before, but I'll tell it again because I love stories. But my oldest boy, Ryan, when he was born, birth is a rather traumatic experience for mother and for child, okay? And my boy is crying like every newborn does, but he's crying. And I put him on my chest and I sit in the chair and I start singing to him. And he stops crying. He snuggles into my chest and he falls asleep. And the reason he did that was because I sang to him while he was still in my wife's womb. I spoke to him. I prayed over him. At night, I'd just rest my hand on her belly and I would just pray over him. He knew my voice. And it didn't take me shouting for him to know. He heard it. Well, this morning, if you're here and you're exhausted, if you're tired, I'm not talking about physically. There is physical tiredness. I understand that. Okay. But spiritually tired. If you are spiritually exhausted, I think God has one of two things, or maybe both things, for you to hear this morning. The first is, don't give in. Don't bow down. Don't stop. Don't relent. Don't give up. Don't let pain become your focus. Just like earlier I said that, no, Cray, you got this. You're right where I need you to be. Like my coach said to me. I think that's one thing God has to say to you this morning if you're spiritually exhausted here. The next thing is, I never told you to pick that weight up. No wonder you're so tired. You see this picture? This is my friend Nathan, and we were on a 7-mile hike. Our packs each weighed around between 60 and 80 pounds. 7-mile hike up through the mountains. It was tiring. Well, on the trip, I kind of made a game of putting sticks in his backpack without him knowing. And I remember his face when he sat down to rest and realized there was some sticks he had been carrying. This is funny, but in the long journey of following God, because it's not a standstill moment, it's a journey. We pick up weight that we never should have picked up. And it's no wonder that we get so exhausted and so tired, because we picked up something that God never called us to pick up. But God has a journey for us to follow. And if we have excess weight, excess baggage, it's a lot harder to get there. And the other end of this is, if you're here today and you're not spiritually exhausted, you feel like, I'm fine, I'm doing great spiritually. Me and God, we're doing good. I have lots of energy. I'm going to kind of warn you and challenge you that God's preparing you to pick up a weight, to do something, to carry it. God promised us that we would have struggle, that we would have trial, that it wouldn't be easy. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with resting, because resting is very important. Like any healthy coach, God knows when we should rest, because he knows what's coming. He knows that when you're injured, if you picked right back up and kept jumping in and doing that exercise, that you'd hurt yourself more. There are moments that God tells us to rest. We do need to hear that. But if you're here and you feel like you have all this wonderful energy, God's preparing you to pick up a weight and to carry it, because we only grow through struggle. We only grow through pain. Anybody who has ever run a marathon, you don't wake up that morning and just decide to run that marathon. You struggle and you fight every day to get further and better and faster and stronger. And after a while, that marathon becomes an achievable goal, because you have pushed yourself to a point where it can happen. We used to say in high school, pain is weakness leaving the body. We would scream that to each other when somebody was bent over, ready to give in. We'd say, pain is weakness leaving the body. You're getting stronger. But physical pain, that's one thing. If you're here today and you struggle with physical pain, I'm not downplaying that. It is real. It is a huge struggle. But physical pain and emotional pain and spiritual pain are two very different realms. Next Sunday is the anniversary of the death of my son, Brody. Next Sunday, if I don't hug you, if I don't smile as much, I'm carrying some weight. This is the box that I made for his ashes. The picture doesn't do it justice. It's not finished. I'm going to have it finished by next Sunday. But it's small. This is some weight. It's been hard. This year has been hard. And this year I feel like God's been telling me, like that coach did, no, Eric, you're right where I need you to be. One more play, Eric. Just take it one play at a time, one day at a time, one breath at a time. Come on, Eric, I know you're tired, but don't give in, don't give up. Victory is coming. You remember those athletes that I mentioned earlier, that we spend all this money on, that we buy their memorabilia and we wear their sports stuff, and we cheer them on. These athletes have reached these levels because they have endured such physical pain over the years, over the countless hours of practice. They've pushed themselves and they didn't give in. I'm pretty sure that every moment they're on that field, they are exhausted, they are frustrated, they are ready to give in. They are ready to give up, especially at those end-of-game moments when it's the highest stress and everything rides on just a few plays. That's the hardest struggle. But we admire the fact that they don't give in. And we admire the fact that they listen to their coach when their coach tells them what to do and tells them how to push. And that they've listened to their coach for years and decades to reach that point. We just read Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We read this story. And this is King Nebuchadnezzar is very prideful. And they make a golden statue. And everyone's supposed to bow down and worship it. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow down and worship a golden idol. I want to point out a couple of things in this passage. First off, I have a lot of respect for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego because they're facing death and they say, even if God doesn't provide for us, we're still not bowing down. Even if I die, I'm not bowing down to your false god. That's some boldness. But I have a challenge inside of this passage here. That God did not call them to pick up a weight or a burden more than they had already been carrying. He just called them to be faithful with what he had called them to do. He called them to not bow down to false gods, to not worship false gods, to only pray and worship him, pray to and worship him. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not pick up another weight spiritually. They didn't add another thing to their schedule. They just were faithful with what God had called them to do. And when the pressure was there, they remained faithful and they didn't give in and they didn't bow down. And we admire this and we respect this and we love this. But I want to point out this final thing to you. What are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's real names? Don't look it up. It's in the book of Daniel. But can anybody here tell me? Can you? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their real names. Because those were their slave names. Those were the hard time names. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were taken out of their homeland, forced into slavery, given new names as a sign of you belong to me now. You are no longer the person you thought you were. You are property of Babylon. They're given these new names, and these new names symbolize stress and weight and fight and struggle and pain. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are known for their slave names. They're not known for their everything's going easy and I'm sitting on the couch watching TV relaxing names. Well, I want to challenge us this morning that there are two different kinds of weights. You'll see them spelled on the screen. Same word, different spellings, vastly different meanings. Weight and wait. W-A-I-T is hold on. One more minute. Don't stop. It can mean stop. When, you know, our coach, our parent, our teacher tells us, wait. Don't start yet. But then there's W-E-I-G-H-T, which is how much is it? How heavy is it? How hard is it to carry? And this morning, I'm going to challenge us with what is God calling you to do? What is God saying to you today? Which weight is God saying to you? Because when we carry that pain, when we carry that struggle, when we carry that strife, that heartache, when we keep fighting and we don't give in, when we don't let pain become our focus, patience becomes our outcome. Like in any athletic event, any practice, when you are at the point of exhaustion and your coach keeps telling you one more sprint, one more run, one more rep, one more time, run that one more time, you patiently keep doing it, right? You find endurance inside yourself that you never thought you have because pain does not become your focus. Patience, faithfulness becomes your focus. I think today maybe God's telling you, wait, W-A-I-T. Don't give in. Don't bow down. Don't let up. I know it hurts. One more play. Come on, give it one more day, one more play. Keep it going. On the flip side of that, he might also be telling you, don't pick that up yet. You got a long way to go, and if you pick that up, you're not going to have enough strength to make it there. Wait. We see in James 1, 2, and 3, verses 2 and 3, my brothers and sisters, think of the various tests you encounter as occasions for joy. After all, you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let this endurance complete its work so that you may be fully mature, complete, and lacking in nothing. Is God telling you to hold on, to not give in, to not bow down, to not let it go, to keep holding it, even when it hurts? Or is he telling you possibly, don't pick that weight up yet, it's too heavy. You're not ready for that yet. You can't make it the distance I want you to go if you pick that up. Or is he saying, hey, you've already picked up some things that you're carrying with you, like that those sticks on my buddy's back. You're not going to make it as far as I need you to go, as far as I want you to go, if you keep carrying those things. So this morning, I'm going to pray. And as I pray, I'm just going to ask God that he keeps showing us, keep showing you and me, the things that he's calling us to hold on, to not give in, to not bow down, to not relent. And those things that he's calling us, don't pick that up yet, or you picked that up and you never should have. Put it down. We're going to pray. I'm going to give a few moments of silence in this prayer. I'm going to kind of start us off and give some moments of silence. And you can just have some time with God, because this is what God is saying to you. Which weight is God saying to you today?